We here at the Baltimore Sports Free For All see sports as an escape, but right now there is something serious going down in Baltimore City. For those who just want to listen to sports talk, listen to this show up to the hour and 4 minute mark. To those who want to hear our thoughts on the riots and everything going on in Baltimore City, the hour and 4 minute mark is where you would start. You may skip ahead to that point. Either way, enjoy the show.
Spot. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free For All.
You could say that the Orioles had a bad week, but it seemed like over the weekend there was a little bit of redemption for that bad week, and people quickly forgot about a five-game losing streak.
They quickly forgot about the Ravens lacking a number one wide receiver, lacking a healthy cornerback. It just seems to put into perspective the things that have happened to the city of Baltimore this past weekend.
Yeah, winning tends to put a little bit of a bright spot in terms of darkness, and
it alleviates hopes.
It seems like the Baltimore Orioles did that over the weekend, and a lot to talk about on the show today. We're going to be talking about the Baltimore Orioles and the week that they had. Ravens draft, we've got our picks, as we said last week. We did position. Now we're doing actual players.
Name-dropping.
And some name-dropping and some specifics. Mayweather-Pacquiao, the fight of the century is coming up. So
finally, after 6 years.
Yeah, tell me who wins.
Yeah,
I'm serious. Tell me who wins. I'm not dropping 99 big ones on this fight.
Mayweather and Pacquiao both.
I'm not even one of the 500 people who spent $1,500 to $7,500 on a ticket. If you did that, you are part of the problem.
Kentucky Derby's this weekend, though.
Yeah, we'll get a little bit of predictions about the Kentucky Derby.
We're basically going to be predicting the winner off of the coolest name.
Jeez, we're predicting a lot of things on tonight's show. We're predicting, draft picks. We're predicting Kentucky Derby winners and everything else like that. And as the disclaimer said at the beginning of the show that I put out there, since the show is pre-recorded and there's a lot going down in the Baltimore City right now, is that we will talk sports, because I see that sports is sort of a way of people just to take their minds off of something just for a second. Not to ignore something, but to take their minds off of it just for a second if they need a little bit of a reprieve from what is going on. But we will be talking about the situation that is going down in Baltimore this week as we speak. And as we have recorded the show, there could be more developments as the week goes on after the show's recording. But we feel as though, we should talk about it to a point. And as the disclaimer said, we had the actual time. You can skip ahead if you just want to listen to that, or if you want to stop this podcast at that point, that is the time to do so.
And if you want an escape from reality and listen to any of our segments, it will be available for you to see.
Yep. All right, so let's get into it right now. The Baltimore Orioles, five-game losing streak over the course of the week. You were thinking doom and gloom. They lost to Toronto 13-6. It seemed like Jose Bautista was just owning the Orioles, doing the little fist pump that he was doing against Darren O'Day and trying to pay him back for something that happened, I think, 2 years ago?
And also started some beef with Adam Jones there, too.
Yeah.
You had Jose Bautista in the postgame with the Toronto media outlets saying, I don't care about what he says and everything like that. I'm like, Adam Jones is a pretty prominent player in Major League Baseball. I'm sure his words carry some weight with you.
Yeah, Adam Jones is in MLB 15, the show, and he's one of the cover boys of the show. I mean, yeah,
he's pretty much a face with Major League Baseball right now.
Yasiel Puig is on the cover of MLB 15, the show, but don't let that fool you, because Adam Jones is also one of the title cards, and so to speak, in the main menu. So you pick on something right there. There is Adam Jones for you, front and center. The guy is becoming a superstar in Major League Baseball, and not just because of his bat, not just because of his glove, just because he's an overall really good person.
Yeah, just a lovable character in all of baseball, especially the Baltimore area, the Baltimore Orioles organization. And looking at that game there where Jose Bautista just wanted to rub it in the Orioles' faces there, just going one for five is all he went for. Okay, congratulations. You batted 200 against your opposition. Oh, by the way, your batting average is still 149. You're not even batting your weight yet. But unfortunately, they did get the last laugh in that Tuesday matchup. 13-6 was the box score for the Blue Jays winning that game over the Orioles. Mark Burley was the winner of that game and proving the 3-0. Your boy, Bud Norris, 0-2. But he did redeem himself later the weekend.
Yeah, he did over the weekend and unfortunately surrendered a 3-run home run. He was legitimately ticked off about that, considering that he had one. He allowed one run. He had a 15-1 lead, so to speak, and then all of a sudden, oh no, it was a 12-1 lead, and then bam, all of a sudden he gets a 3-run home run. He's like, ah, this hurts my day.
I know. We want to get to your boy's win there, but we still got to review some of the lumps the Orioles took in the Great North.
He has been taking his lumps both in spring training and now the regular season. It has carried over, and now I can talk about, you know, the struggles that we saw in spring training have now carried over into the regular season, and Bud Norris seems to. You got to be able to get it straight somehow, or else you could be going to the bullpen when one Dylan Bundy comes up. Because right now, no starting position in that rotation, other than Tillman, Chen, and Gonzalez are safe.
Yep, and moving on to the Wednesday matchup, where in the second game of the Blue Jays series, the Blue Jays ended up winning that game 4-2. Your winner was Sanchez, improving to 1-2 on the year. Ubaldo Jimenez loses that game for the Orioles.
But not,
1-1
not,
on
not
the
too
year.
Bad. Not too bad, though. It's not Ubaldo Jimenez fashion that we've seen last year. I think the guy is actually sort of, you know, turning it around here. I don't want to jinx it.
five innings pitched in the start, 4 earned runs. It wasn't necessarily good, but it wasn't necessarily, you know, earth-shatteringly terrible by Ubaldo's, circumstances, given last year how he performed as a starting pitcher. But looking at that game, the only offense that was really provided by the Baltimore Orioles was from infielder Jimmy Paredes, who hit his first home run of the year off Sanchez with one on. It was a 2-run home run. Paredes' first 2 RBIs of the season. But Paredes wasn't done yet for the rest of the week. But, yeah, the Orioles still ended up taking more lumps. However, in the third game where the Orioles did end up getting swept on the road against Toronto, they did show some heart in their 7-6 loss on Thursday against the Blue Jays. And that was, I believe that was Manny Machado. Manny Machado in that 7-6 loss, he had, I think he was a multi-home run game for Machado.
Yeah,
yep,
it was.
Two home runs.
It was an interesting game just because it seemed so hopeless from the get-go, and then they kind of came back, and then it was like, oh boy, here we go. And then all of a sudden they came back and made it very interesting there at the end, especially Manny Machado.
And this is an Orioles team that last year had an identity so outlandish that you could get yourself involved with it. You could relate to them. But now it seems like this year, that personality seemed to have waned off a little bit. The Orioles team is trying to figure out who they are going into this year. But
just a little bit, considering the fact that, you know, they had the "we won't stop" movement and everything, and it seemed like everything was all hunky-dory, and the comebacks that they've had. And they're coming back in these games. They're making them close, Josh, except for that 13-6 loss that they had. They're not getting completely blown out of the water.
Yeah, but when we relate to starting pitching matters here, Hutchinson was the winner for the Blue Jays, improving to 2-0 on the year. Just a great game by Hutchinson there. 8 innings pitched, 2 earned runs off 4 hits, 7 strikeouts, no walks, only 1 home run allowed, and one of those home runs was against Machado. Chris Tillman had another poor start, loses his record 2-2, 4 1/3 innings pitched, 7 earned runs off 5 hits, and 1 home run allowed, 5 walks allowed. So a bad outing there by Chris Tillman, who is supposed to be the ace of your staff, air quotes, ace of your staff, since that seems to be the thing with all 30-plus teams in Major League Baseball. Everybody has to have their, quote, ace.
Everybody's got to have the ace of the diamond, ace in the deck, so to speak.
Yeah.
And Chris Tillman has struggled this past week, didn't he?
I mean, that's an understatement, Darius.
It was definitely a 14.54 ERA in his start this past week. Youch. That's a painful one to swallow.
Yep, and going on to Friday, where the Baltimore Orioles came back to Oriole Park at Camden Yards and faced off against the AL East rival Boston Red Sox.
By the way, how did our contest winner enjoy that game?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Angel Healy, we have to look at our Facebook page here real quick. Now that you mentioned it to me, I was going to say something before we started here, but Here was the message that I got from Angel here. Where is it?
Fan interaction right here is what we're going with. Somebody who was did something that we did with the contest and therefore decided to offer her thanks for the tickets that we provided after she did her due diligence in the contest. So, Josh, if you're looking for the message right there, I mean, look, the message was sound. I saw it in my inbox as well about the fact that this person enjoyed the game and the way it was, even though it was very cold on Friday. Can we just say, enough with the cold weather, guys. Enough with the cold weather. I've had it up to here with the cold weather in terms of this. I had to put my heat back on this week.
Well, basically, Angel, her message here, I can't seem to find it on Facebook. But when I do, we will give full credit next time. But she did say that the seats were great, even though it was a loss. Her friends from New Orleans who were visiting Baltimore this weekend had a great time at the game. So, you know, Angel, thank you for enjoying your prize from us at the Baltimore Sports Free for All. And thankfully, your friends from New Orleans had a great time, too. New Orleans, party town, USA right there. But, yeah, the Friday night game, the Orioles ended up losing 7-5. Just a heartbreaker right there at home, especially after you're trying to get off a four-game losing streak. And now that four-game losing streak turned to 5 on that past Friday. We look at starting pitching here. Miguel Gonzalez really didn't have a great start, not a quality start, but in my opinion, was solid enough to sort of hang in there and give his team a chance. 6 innings pitched, 4 earned runs, gave up 2 home runs, which if you look at his start, other than those 2 home runs, he did have a solid starting game right there against the Boston Red Sox. So, I mean, even though at the beginning of the year we said Miguel Gonzalez was going to be that hard luck pitcher there for the Baltimore Orioles, it seems like he's holding his own against anybody he comes up against in every start.
Yeah, and the way it seems that things have come on their own, and on Friday it was weird and everything that was going on. Saturday, can we talk a little bit about the game that happened on Saturday?
I guess we have to, right? This game here went into extra innings.
Extra innings. It seems like whenever Boston plays a team, they somehow find a way to delay a game. I mean, even on Friday night, it was a 9-inning game. It seemed like it wasn't too many runs scored, but it was a 3-hour and 30-minute game, Josh. How about this game on Saturday night to where you've had just multiple things happening all at once, and then it goes into extra innings, and the way that it just played out just tugged at your heartstrings.
And before we get it, before we get to that, though, we have to commend Wei-Yin Chen on his start Saturday night against the Boston Red Sox. 8 innings pitched, 2 earned runs off 4 hits, 5 strikeouts, 1 walk. You can't get any better there with your supposed number 2, number 3 starter right there, Wei-Yin Chen, who looked shaky in his first couple starts for the start of the year, but is actually putting in the numbers there as each start goes along, and hopefully he will reclaim his 2014 glory with each quality start that he possesses now. Zach Britton, your closer, had his first blown save of the season. Didn't cost the Orioles the game, though. It was one run that tied the game.
Isn't that kind of weird how that happens, though? You're like, blown save. Oh, boy, he must have gotten a loss. No.
It's like an ugly stat that stares right at you in the face.
And as a matter of fact, a person who blows the save can get a victory.
Yeah, that too. Zach Britton had a blown save in the game there, but it didn't necessarily cost the Orioles. There was some bad fielding opportunities there late in that 9th inning, and it just seemed to me that, is it me or, I don't want to say Nick Markakis, I don't want to say Nelson Cruz, because you know people on social media want to harp on that.
They've already harped on that. They're on that like vultures.
They look at that as the reason the Orioles' fielding woes are the reason that they're at right now. It's just,
even though most of the time they're wrong.
Yeah, but looking at the offensive statistics there, Jimmy Paredes having a solid game there, hit his 3rd home run of the season, 4-for-5, 2 runs driven in, 2 runs scored. We got to talk about Jimmy Paredes here, because it seems to me that with the losses of J.J. Hardy to start out the year, with Manny Machado sort of recovering from his multiple knee injuries in the past 2 seasons, and given the fact that Jonathan Scope will be out for a minimum of 8 weeks, it seems to me that Jimmy Paredes is stepping up greatly for the Baltimore Orioles. And I guess you can use that football mentality, next man up. Jimmy Paredes is doing that and then some at the plate.
Yeah, he's a wow. I was even seeing like people on MLB Network giving this guy some serious love by saying, man, you could be seeing a superstar in the making here with Jimmy Paredes. And I'm like, easy, guys, easy. Remember when Javi Lopez hit like 600 for like the first month of the season?
Oh, well, that was in 2004 when he did that.
That off a little bit. Let's slow down the tractor here for just one second there. But yeah, Jimmy Paredes had an outstanding week. I mean, good grief. The guy, 3 home runs hitting over 400. I mean, wow. Jonathan Scope who?
Yep, and in the bottom of the 10th inning, when the Orioles were facing off against deadly Boston Red Sox closer and former Oriole Koji Uehara, Koji had his first blown save of the season, which resulted from a poorly fielded Adam Jones double, which ended up having him scored from a Chris Davis sack fly.
It's funny you say that, a poorly fielded Adam Jones double. It's good to mention that that was ruled a double.
It was ruled a double. I mean, I'd say poorly fielded because you could have just played that ball, you know, accordingly, and, you know, it probably still would have been a double. Maybe it would have been a triple if Jones would have been gutsy enough. Probably would have gotten it, but still at the end of the day, that's when being flashy usually costs you a game.
Remember, it is a team game. You win as a team, you lose as a team.
Unless you play flashy and screw your team over.
Well, that too. Yeah. And you have a little flashiness. Sometimes it does come to bite you. I mean, ask DeSean Jackson.
Yep. And speaking of things that aren't so flashy and don't necessarily bite you in the ass unless it's on a specific sixth day of the week, David Lowe pinch hit for Travis Snyder in the bottom of the 10th inning. And for one at bat, Ray, one at bat, looked like Chris Davis.
Yeah.
Sending a home run ball right into the standing room section in right field. Orioles win 5-4.
It's a walk-off.
David Lowe enjoyed that mob down, enjoyed that mobbing at home plate because as far as game-winning home runs go, he may never see one again.
Just do me a favor and don't be like Kendry Morales and
jump and break your
ankle,
everything in your foot.
Yeah, and then your career is never the same. The guy had so much tremendous upside, and that happens. And you're not so hot now, are you? So now, moving on. By the way, Koji blew that save because the temperature was increased on Saturday. It was too hot for him. Yeah. A little bit of a joke there from when Koji was here saying things were too hot.
Yeah.
Sunday. Oh my God.
All right, if you would have told me that Baltimore was playing Boston on a Sunday and the score was 18-7, I would have thought it was just a boring football game. I would have thought that the kicker for Baltimore scored 6 field goals and
scored 6 field goals, or there were 2 touchdowns and 2 safeties. Actually, that's not very boring. A safety is something that you're like, a safety? What's going on here? It's something that's out of the ordinary. People lose their minds when there's a safety.
I watched bits and pieces of that game, and I could tell you, looking at the box score, I felt like I had to be like you and get prescription glasses and be like, wait a minute, am I reading that right? 18-7? This is no way. I mean, this is a baseball game, right? This is football? But no, the Orioles laid a whooping on the Boston Red Sox in the series finale, winning the series 2-3. 2 out of 3, I should say. 2 out of 3. That's 5-game series. Now, you don't get that in baseball unless it's playoffs, but yeah.
Yeah, so
18 runs off of 20 hits. Stoll had an error, which seems to plague the Orioles fielding-wise, but that wasn't necessarily the detriment in this box score. Solid day all around for the offense. Really, the only player that didn't get a hit was Manny Machado, who went 0-for-4, but still had 2 walks, still had 2 runs scored. And everybody else who had an at-bat had at least 1 hit, Ray.
Yeah, and they batted around twice. Twice! I mean, when was the last time that happened in an Oriole game?
4 Orioles, by the way, Ray, each had 3 hits. Navarro, the second baseman. Jimmy Paredes, another solid game, 3-for-5. Chris Davis, 3-for-5, raising that batting average to a healthy .269.
It's a lot better than what it has been for Chris Davis. So
Delman Young.
Baby steps.
3-for-6. Delman Young had an outstanding game here.
Delman Young has been having many outstanding games here all of a sudden. It seems like ever since that divisional series last year where he had that walk-off 3-run double, or everything that was happening last season, it seems like his career has made a turning point for the better.
Yep, 3-for-6 for Delman Young there. three runs scored, five runs driven in, which ups his RBI total to seven on the year. Chris Davis, 3-for-5 with three runs scored, three RBIs, and hit his fourth home run of the year. So it's nice to see players like Chris Davis, players like Delmon Young, even players like Jimmy Paredes put in the healthy amount of offense for the Baltimore Orioles, even in some days here and there, not so much even days, some odd days, but it is nice to see the offense coming together as a whole. My only problem, Ray, and yes, I know what you're going to criticize an 18-7 win over Boston. Well, you do have to criticize the pitching, not so much the starting pitching. Bud Norris had a good start, 6 2/3 innings, 7 hits, 3 earned runs. By the way, those 3 earned runs pretty much were the cause of being left in way too late. The guy was pretty much over, 110 pitches before he gave up a home run to Pablo Sandoval. So, yeah, either way, though, Bud Norris had a solid game, gets his first win of the year.
He did have a solid game, but you got to like the passion from a guy. He's like, man, this could have been my big, big turnaround game.
ERA would have been 7-something.
Yeah, now it's like something, in the nines.
12.18 is his ERA right now.
As a whole, is a 12.18 ERA.
By the way, though, how weird would it be if Bud Norris was in every game like this and say his record was, 15-5 and had a
12.5 ERA?
You were the worst 15-game winner ever, Bud.
And that further proves my point, how wins and losses as a pitcher is the most overrated stat in sports.
Even though he's your boy. Jason Garcia.
In your mind.
Jason Garcia in long relief. This guy, Rule 5 pick for the Orioles this season, he frightens me as a long relief pitcher.
Well, keep in mind, Josh, he had a nice little cushion.
Yeah, he had a nice cushion, but he gave up 4 runs, 3 earned, and still can't get his ERA down. If you're given a golden opportunity to lower your ERA in the final 2 innings or so, and you can't do it, it's like, dude, what are you going to do if it's a close game and I need you?
I mean, when they hit that home run in the 9th inning, I was like, slow clap. You have 11 more runs to go. You've got to do that 4 more times this inning. Good luck.
All right, so the Orioles end their week going 2-4, which isn't necessarily two and five if you count the Patriot Day game.
But yeah, count Monday.
We already reviewed that game on our last episode. So,
well, we like to keep it as a week just because it's 7 days in a week, so 7 games in a week. So the Orioles go 2-5 over the past week, and you seem like it was doom and gloom, but those 2 wins were big ones.
Yep, and your AL East standings as of this podcast,
which you can also get on the Sunday Night Sports Delight.
Exactly there. We got to bring that up, too. Yep, the New York Yankees are tied with the Tampa Bay Rays for first place. 11-8 for the Yankees, 11-8 for the Rays. Boston Red Sox are 10-9. Toronto Blue Jays 9-10, Baltimore Orioles 9-10. So the Blue Jays and Orioles tied for fourth in that division. But needless to say, though, it's still early, folks. It's still early. These teams really haven't found their identities yet. Yes, we know the Blue Jays kicked the snot out of the Orioles so far this season, but who's to say those bats aren't going to cool off in May and June, whereas the Orioles' bats heat up in May and June, and maybe so, but Tampa Bay Rays' pitching will cool down. But it is nice to see the toughest division in baseball, live up to its name, even up to April.
Yeah, and everything else that's been going on to find a way for the Orioles. If they can keep this hitting up, I mean, you thought that the hitting would be the weakness that the Orioles had going into the season. The bullpen, you lost Andrew Miller, but at the same time, though, he's one guy, Andrew Miller. Yeah. And your bullpen remains pretty much unchanged from last year. Then you have the starting rotation, which is pretty much the same. Everybody thought it was the hitting that would cost Baltimore. It's actually the pitching.
Yep, and the series for this week coming up, the Monday, April 27th game against the Chicago White Sox has been postponed at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Me and Ray will get to that later on in our show. Tuesday, April 28th, the White Sox are scheduled to be at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Same with Wednesday. Then there's an off day on Thursday. Friday, the Orioles host a 3-game series at home against the Tampa Bay Rays from May 1st to May the 3rd. And then me and Ray will bring you the next week in review for the Orioles, and hopefully they go, let's say, 4 wins maybe out of this week.
Yeah.
Get that record up a bit.
Okay, maybe possibly 3.
Yep, there you go. So there's your week in review for the Baltimore Orioles.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
With the 26th pick in the 2015 NFL Draft, the Baltimore Ravens select... Well, who do they select?
That was a terrible Roger Goodell impersonation,
well,
by the way.
I don't have that heavy baritone voice that Roger Goodell is going to possess when he goes to Chicago. By the way, I just got to say this for the sake of saying it. Thank God the NFL Draft is in Chicago this year, because I was just tired of seeing all those Jets fans overcrowding the place.
At Radio City Music Hall?
Like they matter in the spectrum of the NFL.
I mean, the NFL Draft has become a spectacle in and of itself. Why not hold it in different cities now? I mean, yeah,
Yes, I agree.
Radio City Music Hall has its moments to where you can say, oh yeah, it has its charm, but there are other places throughout the country you can have this. And now that you've made it into a spectacle by spreading it out over multiple nights instead of having it on a Saturday and a Sunday, where people are going to have a nice little draft party and just sit back and enjoy some chips and watch the draft. Now they got to watch it over several different days.
Yep, and it seems like the most memorable thing for the Jets in the past several seasons have been the fans at overcrowded Radio City Music Hall in New York. But thankfully, Chicago this year, maybe we'll see some people impersonate Mike Ditka, have the fake mustaches like the super fans and all that. That would be entertaining, but hopefully it doesn't become an overcrowding thing, and hopefully we'll see a diverse section of other NFL fans from other NFL teams. But moving on to the 2015 NFL Draft, where the Baltimore Ravens have many needs: wide receiver, cornerback, maybe a backup offensive guard, a running back to hopefully replace Justin Forsett in the near future. Yep, these are needs that the Baltimore Ravens... Tight end. We got to mention tight end, too, because who knows what's going to happen with Dennis Pitta? Who knows what's going to happen with Crockett Gilmore or Ray's favorite Ravens player, Philip Supernaw? So, moving on to the picks. Finally, we're going to be name-dropping. Before we announce anything, Ray, do you foresee any trades happening in the draft coming up this
week? It's Ozzie Newsome. He trades almost every year. He does that, even though he's got 3 fourth-round picks and 2 fifth-round picks. I mean, the guy trades for what he trades, but he could probably use those picks as trade bait, so to speak, and maybe even trade another player away. And with that, what we've seen, several things happen on draft day. I think, what was it, on draft day that the Ravens acquired Steve McNair?
Yeah, they traded, I believe it was a 4th or 5th round pick, or it was a compensatory pick for Steve McNair, depending on how he performed in the 2006 season. So, yeah, you do have those picks there for teams to evaluate over the season as the season goes along. And there have been talks that the Philadelphia Eagles may trade one of their 5 potential starting quarterbacks that they have on their roster to get Jake Mariota, but yeah. But before we get to
Marcus Mariota.
Marcus Mariota. Why do I say Jake Mariota?
Jake Arrieta. That's what you're thinking of.
It's baseball season. I do it all the time.
You are thinking of former Orioles pitcher, now with the Chicago Cubs, Jake Arrieta.
I'm thinking of like a baseball-football hybrid player. That's what I'm thinking of right there.
Deion Sanders?
Deion Supernaw?
Bo Jackson?
Yeah. Randy Jackson? No.
What? Randy Jackson?
Never mind.
Play for Journey for a little bit.
Yeah. Very good musician there for Journey, but... The journey the Ravens are going to go on, as corny as that intro was.
I mean, how is it that I remember Randy Jackson for his time in Journey and not his time for American Idol? Oh, wait.
Because you watch too many American Idol shows.
No, because I hate American Idol. That's why.
But before we get to the Ravens draft, who do you believe is going to be the first overall pick? I have Jameis Winston.
I got to go with Mariota.
The reason I say Winston is because Tampa Bay... they need a playmaker at the quarterback position. They already got playmakers in certain positions, running back, wide receiver, especially Evans at wide receiver. And if he gets a solid quarterback, he may put up some monster numbers.
I'll give you 3 names why Jameis Winston's not going first.
Why is that?
Aaron Hernandez, yep. Ray Rice, Greg Hardy.
Why is that?
Because, you know, I think NFL teams are now going to get characters with a character issue that are going to really affect people coming out of the draft and say, hey, look, you're a loose cannon. We can't really trust you at quarterback.
But it's you could say it's a loose cannon feature, but you could look at it as high risk, high reward. Do we really have anything to lose at this point? We already got the first overall pick.
I mean, the Aaron Hernandez
Plus, you'll sell out
getting
a lot.
Getting arrested and off the Patriots didn't really hurt them much, did it?
And the state of Florida is mainly a college football population, or was it populace? Is that the right term?
Yeah, there? A huge populace, yeah. To the point where...
So you will draw those Florida State fans to come to
the
your
point,
games.
To the point where there is a little bit of validity in the criticism of police forces down there in Tallahassee when they decide to sweep things under the rug for a star player.
Yeah.
There is a little bit of claim.
But I would be shocked if Winston was picked first overall there, considering that he, even though he does come with the high risk, he does come with the best attributes for a starting quarterback.
Yes, but the potential rape case flying over his head is one thing, but the stolen crab legs, yelling up on cafeteria tables and being caught on Twitter, yelling a meme that should just die. Please just die.
All right, so... The 2015 NFL Draft for the Baltimore Ravens, here are their picks: 26, 58, 90, 122, 125, 136, 158, 171, 175, 203. And considering the fact that me and Ray had to look at these lists and we had to look at the prospects that are each ranked, whether it's by position or overall position for the NFL Draft, we figured that just getting into... Oh, which pick's going to be traded to what team and yada yada. That was just too much of a headache right there. So we are just going to go pick by pick by pick by pick. So, Ray, I'm going to give you the honors. With the 26th pick in the 2015 NFL Draft, in your opinion, the Baltimore Ravens select...
Byron Jones, cornerback out of Connecticut.
I do like that pick up there, considering the fact that even with a healthy Ladarius Webb and with a healthy Jimmy Smith, you do have a solid cornerback... unit right there for the Ravens, but as we've seen in the past several seasons, Ladarius Webb, Jimmy Smith have had injury issues, and considering the fact that they are going to need a solid pickup at cornerback and are going to add much needed depth at the cornerback position, that wouldn't be a bad pickup.
No, it wouldn't, and considering the fact that they just locked up Jimmy Smith for multiple years now, and they are saying, yeah, smart move. That was a smart move. Locking Ladarius Webb up for a long-term deal was a smart move on their part. It don't look so smart right now, considering Webb's hasn't really been able to fully recover from his injury. And Jimmy Smith got injured this past season, which is a damn shame. So you look at the deal. That's why nothing is guaranteed in the NFL. That's why guaranteed contracts are kind of hit or miss. But Byron Jones out of Connecticut, 6'1". He's coming off of a shoulder injury himself. But the guy has great leadership skills. From everything that's going around, the guy is a great person to be around that a lot of sources around him are saying. And with the way that he can, with the way that he plays, he can be moved to free safety if need be. So he can be a cornerback safety type hybrid the Ravens could be picking up here. So not only do they need cornerback help, they need safety help. And to me, Byron Jones is quite valuable in that sense.
So this is kind of a totally different spectrum from when we were talking about Winston being the first overall pick. Jones is coming off of an injury, but he does have some great attributes for a starting cornerback in the NFL. So this is a high-risk, high-reward kind of move for the Ravens here?
I would say so with Byron Jones. They picked Jimmy Smith in the first round a couple years ago. I mean, I think that turned out okay.
The 26th pick, in my opinion, for the Baltimore Ravens will be Jalen Strong, wide receiver, Arizona State. Now, I know what you're thinking here. You're looking at the prospects list. Well, Jalen Strong is projected to be a second-round pick. Well, exactly. He's the 41st-ranked overall player, according to CBSSports.com. He's the 8th-ranked wide receiver overall, over names like Amari Cooper, who will be long gone by the 10th pick, Kevin White out of West Virginia, who will be long gone after the 10th pick, Devontae Parker out of Louisville, Breshad Perriman out of Central Florida, and Philip Dorsett out of Miami, Florida. So... Jalen Strong, I'll tell you why I like Jalen Strong. I like his size. It reminds me of Anquan Boldin, a wide receiver that Joe Flacco greatly got along with, especially in his times of need. Jalen Strong, 6'2", 270 pounds, was a junior out of Arizona State, played in the Pac-12 conference. His 40-yard time, 4.44, not necessarily earth-shattering for a starting wide receiver, but... You figure with his size and his speed, it's good enough to be that replacement for Torrey Smith right there in the wide receiver slot.
Yeah. Okay, so we're talking about you know, wide receiver going in the first round. You and I had a debate about this last week about should it be wide receiver or secondary? What is the bigger need for Baltimore right now? And in terms of that, Ozzie always picks the best player available. So it all depends on if Jalen Strong will be available and Byron Jones will be available. Because Byron Jones could go before the Ravens actually pick. So it could be a very real possibility that they could pick up either one of these guys.
So with the 58th pick in the 2015 NFL draft, the Baltimore Ravens select.
I'm going wide receiver like I did last week, Devin Smith out of Ohio State.
Your girlfriend will love that pickup, that's for sure.
I mean, I know she's an Ohio State fan. Avoid the Ohio State bias. I mean, come on, Josh. They just came off of a national championship. They're going to have a lot of players go in the draft.
And also, you're going to be going to a quality NFL organization. Granted, you're going to be going into an organization that, you know, you're going to have a veteran wide receiver to learn a lot from. Devin Smith has a lot of potential, especially as a second-round pick.
Yeah, and he's basically a Torrey Smith Jr.
Yeah, and basically about Devin Smith here, if let's say Devin Smith had another national championship season, he probably would have ended up being a top 10 pick along with Amari Cooper and along with Kevin White. But Devin Smith as a second round pick, I could see that there. But
actually, I want to go more into Devin Smith too. If he had Braxton Miller throwing to him all season,
he
could have put up some big numbers, though.
And his stock would have improved.
Yes.
Dramatically.
The one weakness, though, that he has is that he thinks about the run before he thinks about the catch, so he's subject to drop balls. But he had 931 yards despite being thrown to by a second-string and a third-string quarterback and Cardale Jones and JT Barrett.
Yeah, so granted you had that conundrum going on there with the quarterback positions at Ohio State. If he were to have either JT Barrett or Braxton Miller thrown to him all season long, he most likely would have alleviated his draft stock right there. But I could see Devin Smith being a solid pickup for the Ravens if they were to go that route in the second round. But my 58th pick for the Baltimore Ravens is the tight end position, Clive Walford from the University of Miami, Florida. Looking at Walford's stats here, I am not crazy about his 40-yard time. 4.79 is his 40-yard time, which is fast if you're a linebacker, maybe a defensive lineman hybrid player on defense. But I do like his size. 6'4", 251 pounds. Reminds you of a Todd Heap in a sense. But, you know, and also looking at how Miami was portrayed over the last several seasons, he may come in handy for some run blocking, especially with Justin Forsett, who definitely loved his run blocking last season. And if Walford is picked up, because let's face it, Max Williams is the first overall tight end, according to draft experts, with Walford being a distant second, I do like the idea of the Ravens picking up a tight end who could potentially start down the road.
Yeah, and speaking of tight end, that will be my third-round pick, and I'm going back to the national champions, unfortunately, and that's Jeff Uhrman, tight end out of Ohio State, 6'5", 254 pounds. The guy is a serious pass-catching tight end. The only problem is that his blocking...
Bigger than Walford, too. 6'5", 254 pounds. That's incredible, man.
Yeah, line blocking, a little bit sketchy, though. That's the one thing that gets me a little bit there. But when it comes to tight ends, you either have a pass-catching tight end or you have a tight end who can really block. The ones who can establish some sort of middle ground, though, those are the elite tight ends in the league. And with Jeff Uhrman out there with being a tight end, I think that he would slip to the third round and the Ravens would be able to pick him up. Actually, not slip to the third round because he's projected to go in the fourth round.
Did battle injuries in 2014, though. Only had 17 catches for 207 yards and a pair of touchdowns for the national championship team there.
Yeah, you need to look at his 2013 campaign to see any type of what kind of success you can get out of this guy. And guy's got tremendous upside. He's got great size and great speed for a pass-catching tight end and great leaping ability. I think, to me, he is the prime example of what you would want in a Baltimore tight end.
My 90th pick will finally address the needs at the cornerback position, and this pick is a little controversial given his past history, but my 90th pick overall, Ray, is Southern California cornerback Josh Shaw. Nope, I'm not saying my name and drawing it out. Josh Shaw, S-H-A-W. Shaw, 6 foot, 201 pounds, senior out of Southern California. Had a very solid 40-yard time at the combine, 4.44. Vertical jump is 37 and a half inches. Shuttle's 4.12, and he has a great big frame, very muscled up here, has quick feet, and just can change directions at ease. The only problem that he has going in, if you are drafting him with the 90th pick, was the things that have unfolded off campus last summer. He made national news, and you know they ended up turning out to be false. Pretty much he pretty much had girlfriend issues and just had a woe is me kind of day. Everybody has a bad day, but when you kind of make it out to be news, it's never a good sign.
Now, when you say girlfriend issues, you don't mean girlfriend domestic issues, do you?
No, nothing like that.
Nothing that involved violence or anything of the sort, because the NFL...
A story that turned out to be false, pretty much, is just...
May have turned out to be false. Allegedly turned out to be false. Allegedly turned out to be true. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, there were no issues that turned out with the local law enforcement there, so it pretty much was a guy that got upset over his girlfriend. Maybe they broke up, and you know, it's dramatic stuff.
As much as the NFL can come out and say they're taking a stance on domestic violence and taking everything like that, they do somewhat have a winning at all cost mentality. But I do think that that can hurt Jameis Winston to a certain extent, but somebody's going to pick him up in the first round. There's no doubt about that.
Who do you have going in the fourth round at 122?
Well, in terms of fourth round at 122, I said quarterback. Yeah, I cornerback. So with that, cornerbacks available in the fourth round at that point, I mean, it's tough to guess a draft at that point in terms of what player is going to fall where, because I think at this point, nobody knows what they're doing, and everyone's just like throwing a stick at the wall after like the fourth round or so and just hoping something works, and they just pick the best player that's available in all mock drafts. So how do you pick the best player that's available in your mock draft, Josh?
I have running back David Cobb out of Minnesota, senior running back out of Minnesota, David Cobb, 5'11", 229 pounds. So a little bit small, but quite bulky for his size. You're looking at his 40-yard time, and I know we're going 40-yard. Ooh. Yeah, so if you're drafting this guy out of the fourth round, you better hope he can run through the holes very well, because it doesn't seem like he's quick to get out of the gate there. His combine time for the 40-yard Ray, 4.81.
You love 40-yard times, don't you?
Well, I always look at I'm not Al Davis here, may he rest in peace, because we know he was crazy about 40-yard times. Hence Darius Hayward Bay when he was a first-round pick out of the University of Maryland several seasons ago, and that certainly worked. Not. But, I usually look at 40-yard times given their positions and given how fast they need. I like to see breakaway speed. I know that 40-yard times, you could have a 3.840 and run down the field and outrun cornerbacks, but if you can't catch a ball worth a damn, what good are you in the National Football League? But this guy here, I like him primarily if he looks to be a blocking running back, blocking fullback, but unfortunately, that's why the Ravens have Kyle Juszczyk there at the fullback position, which seems to be a dying breed in the NFL nowadays.
It's a dying breed in a sense that, yeah, I guess in terms of the big powerhouse blocking fullback that you saw in Sam Gash, Vontae Leach, all of these guys kind of went out the window. But you can still use a fullback to a point where you can have them like catch passes to a point.
Yep, and since we're going to be moving down the list here, fourth round, 136, I said wide receiver, you said...
I also said wide receiver.
You also said wide receiver. I had Chris Conley out of the University of Georgia. Fifth round, 158, offensive tackle, Austin Shepard out of Alabama. Yep, Ozzie drafted another Alabama player. Oh, let's see how this turns out, guys. C.J. Mosley. Yeah, let's bring his name up a little bit.
That's
there.
A little bit of C.J. Mosley, a little bit of everything else that comes up. And, C.J. Mosley, I think he did okay with that pick.
I think he did very well with that pick. Here's the interesting local flavor pick that we have here at 171.
And you gotta put a little bit of spice in there, considering the fact that Torrey Smith was that local flavored pick a while ago, and look how he turned out.
Yep, the Ravens lose a Maryland player, and they gain a Maryland player.
Do not say it. Five-star recruits?
Stephon Diggs.
Oh, boy. That would be exciting.
Now, here's the thing about Stephon Diggs. He necessarily hasn't been healthy, hasn't stayed on the field for a majority of his college football career, but when this guy is on the field, and yep, this is another high-risk, high-reward player, he puts up the numbers. He does put up big game numbers. And this guy, in the last several months, has been working his ass off, getting himself in shape for the NFL Combine. And necessarily, if he were healthy these past several seasons, his draft stock definitely would have been high second round pick, maybe late first round.
Yeah, it's such a shame that he got hurt in the latter parts of the year. I mean, it's that's the thing about football is that it sucks, is that 1 minute you're on the rise, then you get hurt, and then you're gone. That's why a lot of players only have like a 3 to 4 year shelf life, that they try to get their money and go, because that's just the way it is in the NFL. You have a high risk of injury, and it sucks.
Yep. With the 175th pick in the fifth round, we have the Ravens picking offensive guard Jameel Douglas out of Arizona State. So reuniting, hopefully, with Jalen Strong, if Strong were selected with the 26th pick in the first round. Sixth round, 203, final pick, knock on wood, unless the Ravens decide to trade down one more time like they did last year. Inside linebacker Bryce Hager out of Baylor. Just to fill up that depth chart there for the Baltimore Ravens linebacking core, which is already stacked already. So,
yeah, linebacker going there. We got a little bit of defense. And as a matter of fact, Josh, is that your first defensive pick?
Looking here, no. I had a cornerback in the third round, and I had a defensive tackle in the fourth round.
There we go. Okay.
Yeah, I had Christian Covington in the fourth round, 125 out of Rice University.
Yeah, you're putting a little more emphasis on offense in this draft, and I just think that, you know, cornerback.
Well, you were cornerback heavy with your rough draft last week, as I was heavy with wide receiver. Then again, one of two options would have happened if me and Ray were general managers. Either we would have been extremely lucky and made it to the playoffs with our picks, or we would have been fired and said, you just wasted all our picks on three positions. That didn't pan out.
Hey, at least they didn't waste three picks on one quarterback.
Yeah, and you also...
DC.
Yeah, and you also could have been like the Eagles, who just traded everything away to pick up Sam Bradford and get Tim Tebow and Mark Sanchez. And, oh, man.
The Tim Tebow move, to me.
I'm going
to
be watching just out of curiosity.
It's an attention-getting move is what you want. Like, it's the Eagles saying, hey, look at us, and getting more press on them.
I just want to see Jay Feely get egg on his face if Tim Tebow makes it as a starter for that team. Yeah, because he says he's the worst quarterback he's ever. Like, dude, seriously?
I want to see. No, come on, let's not take things we can't take back. I mean,
watch the Ravens from 1998 to 2003 or 2005. And
I'd go 2005, 2005.
Yeah,
I want to say six, actually,
or seven. 2007. Yeah, from 1998 to 2007.
No, I'm going to say 1998 to 2006, because Steve McNair was legit good in 2006.
Yeah, and then he was legit bad in 2007.
And in the playoffs as well. But then in 2008, you get one Joseph Vincent Flacco, and ever since then, the Ravens have had a quarterback. It's been A-OK in terms of that. You don't have Chris Redman anymore. You don't have Anthony Wright, Stoney Case, Jim Harbaugh.
Yep. So, Ray, to close out this segment here, what will be Ozzie's strategy going into these next couple of days for the NFL draft coming up in Chicago? Best player available or best position available?
Usually go best player available, but the Ravens have too many glaring needs in this draft coming up that it can't be ignored. Cornerback, wide receiver, you take the pick.
The Baltimore Sports Free For All.
What a weekend coming up in sports. I mean, you've got a whole bunch of things on the docket. The Kentucky Derby, it's Triple Crown season once again. It means warm weather, right? Right?
Warm weather, great unique names for horses, and rooting for little men jockeying the horses there.
Yeah, yeah. You've got that. Everybody roots for the horse. Nobody roots for the jockey. Come on, Josh.
Unless it's Calvin Burrell, then people want to see him win and get that illustrious Triple Crown.
Maybe, but we'll see.
He's
about
the only
that.
One we really know, right? I mean, pretty much.
Well, there was Ken DeSormo. He was
him too.
He was the jockey for Big Brown so long ago, and he got completely thrown under the bus by his management. It's like, oh yeah, it was Ken DeSormo's fault. That's why Big Brown couldn't win that third race.
And
actually, a lot of horses couldn't win the third race.
And should a horse win the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness, can we just not have any more controversies about, is this horse going to race in the Belmont Stakes? Is this horse healthy enough? Is the trainer going to allow it? Just allow it. Just let it
I don't know about that, Josh. You don't allow it if a horse is not healthy enough to do it. If a horse is not healthy enough to do it, don't push it. I mean, remember, horse racing has a big stigma over top of it, Josh, and that's how the horses are treated.
Yeah, and you could also have your horse whisperers there, those trainers, talk to the horse. And by the way, that is an interesting job right there, the trainers themselves, because you do have horse whisperers. You do have guys who, you know, guys or women that talk to the horse and say, how you feeling today? You feeling good? He's not feeling good.
He's really having a bad day, guys.
Guys, he's having a bad day. Leave him alone.
I don't know about that, but...
they are very religious with that stuff, man.
See, the Kentucky Derby has a lot going for it. The Preakness Stakes have a lot going for it because the Kentucky Derby, it's a new season of Triple Crown. Everybody's wondering who's going to be the horse that wins it. Then when the horse wins it, it's all on the Preakness. Is the horse that won the Kentucky Derby going to win the Preakness?
By the way, it's supposed to be partly cloudy on Saturday with a high of 77 degrees in Kentucky.
Yay! That's in Kentucky.
Well, Louisville, Kentucky.
That's in Kentucky. Good grief. It's not... I mean, I guess it's kind of close enough to Baltimore?
Yeah.
Possibly?
It's not even close. But as we look at the 2015 Kentucky Derby, basically this is where people aren't necessarily horse racing experts right away until the winner of the Kentucky Derby comes out on top.
And then they start looking into the horse's past. They look into the trainer's past and everything else that goes on. The jockey, they come up with a feel-good story that makes people go, aw, and tugs at your heartstrings. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, go you. Yes.
It's kind of like college sports, mainly college basketball, college football, where you don't know what the teams look like until they start out 4-0, and then you look into every player's past. Like, oh, he was a 5-star recruit out of high school. This kid's really good. Yeah. Like, you didn't even know who he was in week one. No, me and Ray are going to be honest with you. We don't know much about the horses and their past and everything, but we are going to look at the names, of course, and their stables here, but mainly their names. So here are some interesting names that are entering the 2015 Kentucky Derby. You have International Star, Dortmund, Carpe Diem, American Pharaoh, Frosted, which is really interesting because the horse Frosted is a little gray, so it does look like somebody frosted the horse there.
I mean, you could go with just regular Frost and go Mortal Kombat way.
Mubtahij, Materiality, El Kabir, Upstart, Far Right, It's a Knockout, all in one word, Firing Line, Danzig Moon.
So Danzig Moon.
For all the music fans out there that are Danzig fans, yeah, that would definitely be your
But
horse
Danzig
right
Moon,
there.
I keep thinking that it's like somebody like Jackie Moon from Semi Pro.
Well, that too. That could be that too.
That horse has some swagger entering on the track.
War Story, which just seems to be a reach when you're looking at the nostalgic horses that won the Kentucky Derby and Preakness and races from years past.
Do you remember War Emblem?
That too, yeah. People like to use War as a name for the horse. Like,
what is it good for?
Absolutely nothing.
No, it really isn't.
Yeah. Tencender, if I'm getting that name pronounced correctly. If not, I'm sure we'll find out after this weekend.
Return Tencender.
Yep. Stanford, Mr. Z. Chad Ochocinco's favorite horse, Ocho Ocho Ocho.
Triple Eight. Triple Ocho.
Yep. Bolo. Keen Ice. Fermento, which sounds like something you get at a coffee shop. Bold Conquest, which you
that,
said.
That one is great. Bold Conquest. My money is on him, even though I don't bet on on horse racing.
Metaboss, Fire Spike, and Toasting Master.
Okay, those last four names are it. Those are your top four.
Okay, well, I'm going to look at this list here. You tell me who's going to place first, second, and third in the Kentucky Derby, just based on those names right there. So you said Bold Conquest, Metaboss, Fire Spike, Toasting Master. Those are your four. Right?
I'm going to go my money's on Bold Conquest and Toasting Master.
So Toasting Master and Bold Conquest a tie, or?
No, one and two, box. It's a box.
Then who's three?
Fire Spike?
Okay. So Bold Conquest, Toasty Master, and Fire Spike are raised 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, I'm going to just go by ahead base it off of names simply because I maybe know one person that is hardcore following horse racing and knows all these names.
My winning horse of the Kentucky Derby will be It's a Knockout. Considering that it's the theme for this weekend, especially with the big boxing match coming up between Floyd Mayweather Jr. and Manny Pacquiao, we'll be talking about that shortly. I feel like It's a Knockout would be an appropriate horse to win the Kentucky Derby this weekend. Second place, just for the sake of traditional horse racing, I'll have War Story place second. And third, I will have Bold Conquest. So there you go. It's a Knockout. It's a Knockout, places first, wins the Kentucky Derby, War Story second, and Bold Conquest is third. Those are our picks for the Kentucky Derby. Now, Ray, let me ask you this, and let's just say, for the sake of predicting here, if any of our horses win the Kentucky Derby, do they end up winning the Preakness, or you say, nah, it's not going to happen this year?
I don't think it's going to happen this year.
Not much anticipation going into the Kentucky Derby.
No, and there's not really like a lot of hype either. In fact, when it comes to the Kentucky Derby, I almost forgot about it for an instant when we were talking about it in pre-show. I'm like, oh, Kentucky Derby's this weekend. I thought it was next weekend or something like along those lines. But at the same time, though, Kentucky Derby, it's a thing in sports. Remember, horse racing was a big deal in this country many, many years ago, is what the NFL is. Well, not what the NFL is today. The NFL is today. It was a $9 billion industry. Horse racing was not that many years ago, even if you just for inflation. But horse racing was a big deal in this country. So you can look at the Kentucky Derby and see
they
something there.
They desperately need a Triple Crown. Desperately.
And then unfortunately, over the last couple of years also, is that it's been dominating the Preakness talk is the Preakness even going to still be in Maryland?
Well, that too. I mean, you're definitely going to be – that's definitely going to be a talking point in the next several episodes. And speaking of American pastimes, of course – just like horse racing desperately needs a Triple Crown champion horse, boxing desperately needs an American world heavyweight champion. Unfortunately, that didn't happen this past weekend as Vladimir Klitschko...
Klitschko wins again.
What went all the way, though. Bryant Bye-Bye Jennings went all the way with Vladimir Klitschko, winning a couple of the last rounds there towards the end. So kind of Rocky Balboa-ish in a way. Kind of like if we were going back to Rocky 1 when he fought Apollo Creed and it went the distance, but nobody went to the hospital. Both fighters came out unscathed.
That's one of the best endings in movie history, by the way.
Oh, where they just hugged each other and said there won't be a rematch, that one?
Right no, it was really that, but not only that. It's just the fact that the hero comes out on top so many times in fiction. Here, the hero did not come out on top.
But he went all the way.
But he went all the way and showed dedication. It was a really good way to end in that movie as well. They kind of did repeat that in the latest Rocky movie, in Rocky Balboa.
See, if we didn't even mention the words Rocky Balboa, people would think we were going to be talking about like a romantic comedy. Like, he went all the way. There was dedication there.
He went the distance. He was supposed to be the hero. The hero didn't go out. And everybody's like, yep. We need a hero! Going with 80s inspiration music.
Bonnie Tyler, I think that's the...
Oh, good grief. You know everything. You know everything, Josh.
Sorry.
You are the king of trivia.
Total eclipse of the heart. What can I say?
Oh, good grief.
I know. But something that isn't not so 80s, but more so of the 2010s, is the upcoming title fight between Floyd Mayweather Jr. and Manny Pacquiao. Now, here is the tale of the tape between the two fighters. Both fighters are in their late 30s. You have Mayweather, who's 38 years old, Pacquiao, who's 36. Mayweather out-heights Pacquiao by an inch and a half. Mayweather's 5'8", Pacquiao's 5'6.5". The reach for Mayweather, 72 inches. The reach for Pacquiao, 67 inches. Mayweather is boxing an orthodox style, while Pacquiao possesses an old-school southpaw style. Floyd Mayweather, his record, of course, is absolutely impeccable. 47 wins, no losses, 26 knockouts, 21 by decision, 0 draws. Pacquiao, a totally different story. 57 wins, more wins than Mayweather, has 5 losses, more knockouts, 38 knockouts, and has 2 draws. Now, here's the thing with Manny Pacquiao. He is only 4-2 in his last 6 fights. And in 2 of those fights, he fought Juan Manuel Marquez. One of the last 2 fights with Marquez went majority decision in Pacquiao's favor.
There were 3 fights with Juan Manuel Marquez that had no clear victor, but Pacquiao won all 3 of those fights. And then all of a sudden, here comes Marquez in the last bout between those two. The fourth
knockout in the sixth round.
A decisive knockout to the point where that would make Chris Rock blush.
He became a meme after that. I'm going to take a Manny Pacquiao. Good night, everybody. Yep.
Pacquiao, he got knocked out. And it was quite a sight to behold, to the point where even people in Pacquiao's corner were trying to keep cameramen from taking a picture of him in his comatose state.
Yep.
It was a sight to behold for people who are for or against Manny Pacquiao. So we're looking at this fight now because you talk about the last 6 fights that Manny Pacquiao has had. Those 6 fights happened over the course of many years because the layoff period between fights and boxing is incredible, to the point where it's like, wow, this guy could be a totally different person from his last fight.
Yeah, and considering the fact that Pacquiao has 1 foot out the door with boxing, considering that he wants to be a future politician in his home country.
Well, he is a politician. He was a congressman.
Yeah, but he wants to, I think he wants to make that his full-time career outside of boxing once he's completely done, because you can't really have two dedications at once, because you can't really fill the time schedule with that. So given the fact that Pacquiao, his work is impeccable in terms of his dedication to the sport, having 64 total fights there, has 38 knockouts, guys, you know, True Blood Hall of Famer right there in the world of boxing. Same with Floyd Mayweather. Floyd Mayweather is sort of approaching Rocky Marciano status, where he feels if he gets to 50-0, if he keeps getting undefeated as he goes along, this guy may want people to recognize that he's one of the greatest, even though most sports pundits out there consider him one of the greatest fighters in his respective weight class.
One of the greatest fighters in his respective weight class. Not exactly the greatest person, though, because there's there's a lot of that going around as well. And there are people who defend Floyd Mayweather, and there are people who are against Floyd Mayweather in the way that his history of being with women is in question, and of evicting family members and doing everything else that he does. Hanging out with Justin Bieber, that immediately disqualifies him in my book.
Yeah, but Justin Bieber did have a funny roast on Comedy Central about a month ago, so I guess.
And I didn't even watch it.
I mean, you could watch two clips. Yeah.
That's how many craps I give about Justin Bieber.
Yeah, about as many craps as any other sports athlete that has a dramatic situation in their life, or even a celebrity that has a dramatic situation in their life. But looking at this match here with Mayweather and Pacquiao, does Floyd Mayweather improve to 48-0 and keep elevating his legacy as a professional boxer? Or does Manny Pacquiao shock the world with a split decision or even a unanimous decision by the judges?
I'm going, it goes the distance, unfortunately. Split decision, Manny Pacquiao, also unfortunately, because you're going to now Floyd Mayweather wants to fight Manny Pacquiao so hard. He won't dance around it this time. Of course, it was also Bob Arum in Pacquiao's corner, and something to do with that. It was all kinds of crazy things. But ultimately, the real winner in all of this are both friends of Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao, because of all the money that's being passed around. 500 tickets were available to the general public. They sold out in 1 minute for $1,500 to $7,500. As I said earlier in the show, if you spent money on those tickets, that amount of money on those tickets, you are part of the problem.
And I will say this as a rebuttal. If you just want to be economically friendly with your surroundings and want to watch the fight anyway without spending a dime, hey, go buy some food, go buy some beverages, go over to your friend's house and say, hey, look, I don't really have a lot of cash to give you for the pay-per-view, but I do have some pizza, I do have some Funyuns, yeah, let's go watch the fight. But by the way, saying that you predict the fight's going to go all the way, neither fighter has had a knockout since 2011, and that was Floyd Mayweather, who had a fourth-round knockout over Victor Ortiz in September of 2011. So yeah, if you are fans of knockouts in professional boxing, you're going to be sorely disappointed. But then again, we've seen some strange things happen in the wide world of sports, especially professional boxing. Heck, we've seen Buster Douglas beat up Mike Tyson overseas, you know, moments before anyone found out about it in the States.
There was a show that I was producing for my old radio station that had him on for the 20th anniversary of that.
Who, Buster Douglas?
Yes.
Oh, man. It was
great.
I bet you he has some great stories about that one night. Yeah, pretty much the Joe Namath of his sport right there. Nobody thought he could win the big one.
And Joe Namath was not that good in his career. It was just he's remembered
for
that one
moment. Same with
Buster
Douglas.
He was remembered for that one moment, though. And it's the same thing with Buster Douglas and Joe Namath. It's two sides of the same coin.
Now, do you think Manny Pacquiao could be in that same company, or is it a completely different with Pacquiao?
What, with Joe Namath and Buster Douglas?
Yeah.
No, Pacquiao's been good throughout his career.
Now, Bo, who would you compare him to as a... he's won titles. We know that.
And Roy Jones Jr.
Well, I'm going to use a different sport, though. Like, I would say Brett Favre, you know, because Brett Favre has had some seasons where he got close to going to a Super Bowl in his later career, but just couldn't get there. We saw it in 2007 with the Green Bay Packers, his final year there. And in 2009 with the Minnesota Vikings, that team was just deadly. I think Pacquiao has a Brett Favre-ish kind of aura about him where he does put in a lot of touchdowns, a lot of work, but there are some fights where he just throws some stinkers and just doesn't look the same. And hopefully doesn't wear out his welcome in the ring, but I'll tell you what, I'm definitely going to be watching this weekend. So, yeah, I'll be watching this weekend. Hopefully we see the unexpected.
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
For those of you who have skipped ahead to this point, welcome to the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
And we put the emphasis on Baltimore.
On Baltimore right now because as of the recording of this podcast, Baltimore is burning. And that right there is a huge problem, something that's been escalating for a long time. Anger and tensions built up does not justify the behavior. Maybe the anger so much, but not so much the behavior that we're seeing right now because the people that are wreaking havoc on the streets are not real citizens of Baltimore because the ones who are trying to provide jobs to the inner city or trying to provide economic growth to the inner city, they're the ones that are suffering right now because their businesses that they've worked so hard to build and try to help other people around them are burning right now. And that right there is a damn shame.
And I would just like to say, too, here with me and Ray at the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, we are not a political talk show. At all. We want to avoid politics on the outside as much as possible. When me and Ray come in every week to do a show, we like to be an escape from your reality, your current reality, and just go into things that you would like to hear about or hear us talk about.
There are plenty of sources to find for a coverage of the riots that are going on in Baltimore, and we are not really a reliable source when it comes to what is going on right now. We live in counties. We live in the suburbs. We don't experience what life is like in the city. We don't experience day-to-day interactions with cops. We know cops that work in Baltimore City, and we are hoping that they're okay, and hoping that everybody who is not rioting on the streets are okay, and hoping that, you know, Baltimore can rebuild from this. I will say this, is that I did know somebody who wasn't a participant. There was a victim of the 1968 riots, and one of it broke out in Memorial Stadium to the point where there were children and they were running away and they were trying to avoid being trampled. They had to deal with a friend. They had to deal with a sister who had special needs and everything else that was going on. They got out of the city. The city of Baltimore rebuilt itself and it became a budding metropolis in certain parts. But there is a problem in this country and there is a problem in this state and city. When you can walk into a city and see so much beauty and so much greenery and so much historical places, and then you walk to another part of the city, and it looks like post-World War II Europe.
And that's what we saw in these past several days here in Maryland television, Baltimore television. And it's really hard to put into perspective here because growing up, I always thought that the worst thing I ever saw on television was the September 11th terrorist attacks. And, of course, that if you were there that day, if you remember where you were that day, it was always embedded in your memory that you remember those images and should never forget the victims and the families of that day and the people who put their lives on the line to get everyone out safely on that day.
We see some human moments that we've seen from this coverage. I'll give an example to one Stan Stovall. That guy right there seemed like he was reduced to tears in Baltimore and wanted to be out there with the 300, the clergymen that were out on North Avenue marching. He wanted to be with them to appease the violence and the situation that was happening in that city as it was right then and there. You've got people living in fear right now in Baltimore City, but Baltimore City, as I said earlier, will overcome this.
And the situation we're obviously talking about stems from an arrest involving a 25-year-old Baltimore resident named Freddie Gray, who was apprehended by Baltimore City police officers and suffered spinal injuries while in the back of a police vehicle. Several days later, Freddie Gray was pronounced dead at a hospital in Baltimore, and this ended up being a mark of possible police brutality or police negligence on their part. Now, me and Ray aren't going to really put our own political spin on this because I'm sure any listener who is on one side of the coin or the other could give a damn about what we think politically on this show. But seeing people post on social media Freddie Gray's supposed criminal record, or somebody posting, you know, memes saying "screw the police," and I'm just saying that in the nicest way possible because I've seen some that contain some terrible obscenities. You know, it doesn't matter at this point because you have to let the due process take its course. You have to let justice take its course. Now, the great thing about the country we live in, the United States of America, is we have a constitutional right to peacefully assemble and protest. And to those who are protesting in the name of Freddie Gray, while doing it respectfully and respecting their surroundings and the civilians around them, I commend you. I commend you for exercising your constitutional right for doing that. But for those who are there just knowing that cameras were there, just knowing that their face or their hiding of their face, because I consider those people cowards.
Yeah, but there were a lot of people looting like stores and running out with them, and they got a clear shot of their face right on camera. As the what was that one guy, Antoine Dodson, with the "Hide Your Kids, Hide Your Wife" video?
Yeah,
you are really dumb. You are so dumb.
Yes,
that's exactly what is going on right now with the people that are looting and rioting in Baltimore. You are really dumb.
And I look at that, Ray, and I just think to myself, you can't possibly live here. You can't possibly live here because how do you do that to your hometown? How do you do that to your home city? You know, we've had bad days. I've had bad days. You've had bad days. I've been angry. You've been angry.
How about this? I've had on last Friday night, I had cops blocking off my street.
Yeah.
Because there was an accident on my street. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, I live adjacent to a court. You're either arriving or you're departing. How do you get into an accident on my street? Well, apparently the dude was under the influence of alcohol and was being arrested in process. And my street was blocked off and I couldn't get to my house. I tried to get an answer from a couple officers. They wouldn't give me a response. I was like, gee, officers, way to live up to the being two idiot officers, okay? I don't stereotype. I don't do anything like that. Colors can be deceiving, Josh, because after all, what color is the dress?
Yeah, and when we look at that and we read all the news and we hear all the news, see all the news on television, the internet, and I just stress this to people. Look, I am just as angry as you are at the agitators, the people that look to seek and destroy everything in their path because they want an excuse to, quote, protest. But you have to commend those who are doing a job as much as they can to peacefully, you know, alleviate the situation, to calm it down, to do everything they can, from the police officers from Baltimore County, Anne Arundel County, or any other surrounding counties, to the firefighters who are putting out fires as we speak, considering where the riots are right now, to the local religious leaders who are leading marches. And you think it's like the 1960s all over again with the marches going on, because these seem to be situations that could be solved with, you know, discussion, with talks. And it seems like we are far off from that.
By the way, these riots that have happened on at least Monday, according to the person that I was told was in the riot at Memorial Stadium in 1968, what happened in 2015, nothing compared to what happened in 1968. So there's also that to move on from. And this city will move on from that, when it moves on from that. And everyone, that's the beautiful thing about humanity. You may destroy us. You may do everything you can to us. We always have the will to rebuild until we die.
So I guess as we close out this segment, I'll just say this. You know, to those of you who were, you know, heartbroken over the incidents that happened in the city of Baltimore. And, you know, I've been told this many times about the city of Baltimore, even to outsiders, like, why do you like Baltimore? It's like the worst city in the world. I'm like thinking to myself, it's not the worst city in the world. If you go to the right places, you meet the right people and go to the right scenes, Baltimore is a very unique city, especially in this country. It's a very unique city. And you are right, Ray. It can rebuild. It can redeem itself. But we as a collective, as a society, have to do it together. We can't be, you know, we have to be colorblind. We can't blame one race, one religion, one creed over another, because we do that, it solves nothing. Even if you go on social media and you do that, you're only just making it worse by saying that, by saying, oh, we got to kill these guys. That just
people,
makes it worse.
People have been doing that the last 40 years. It's done nothing. Definition of insanity, Josh, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results.
Yeah, but yeah, so Baltimore, stay strong. Me and Ray know that you guys are going to make it through this. We hope you make it through this. Hopefully in time the wounds will heal and we'll get back to the Charm City we know and love. Hopefully it gets back to better times, and we definitely look forward to seeing that. So, Ray, you have any final thoughts?
It's just go O's, go Baltimore.